Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
I don't know. I don't like any of the intros ever because it's mainly me being an idiot, but whatever. Isn't it? What? I gotta do some rewriting on this script for my life, and if it's not always about me, I've got to change some things. I gotta do some edits. I'm JP, and this is another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. We even have a few regular columns, like product reviews and beer reviews, and of course, our always famous album and CD reviews you can check out in the back of the magazine as well. On this episode, we're going to be featuring an interview with Chuck Reagan. We'll be finding out about Plan B Theater's The Scarlet Letter, and we'll be speaking to local musician Jessica Davis of SLFM. Chuck Reagan is a singer-songwriter from Northern California of Gainesville, Florida-based punk band Hot Water Music. In 2008, Reagan started the Revival Tour, a traveling acoustic music festival. Some past participants include Tim Barry of Avail, Ben Nichols of Lucero, and Brian Fallon of the Gaslight Anthem. On April 13th, the Revival Tour stops in Salt Lake City with Reagan, Tom Gable of Against Me, Corey Brannan, and Nathaniel Radcliffe. Slug contributing editor Ricky Vigil recently spoke with Reagan about the tour.
What was your idea, basically? How did you become inspired to start the Revival Tour?
There's kind of a combination of a few different inspirations, I guess. I mean, for a while, I was, you know, heading out on tours with friends of mine, and normally, you know, after a while, at the end of the tour, we would end up on stage together, you know, playing all the songs together, and that was always the best part of the whole tour. For part of it, you know, we just thought, well, why can't we come together beforehand, organize a little more, you know, communicate a little more, and actually go into an entire tour with this in mind, with this idea of a show in mind, where it's just simply a nonstop performance. And just have a great time. And, you know, everything that went along with that attitude, which was simply just completely doing away with the traditional setup of a show, at least the shows that we're used to, which was simply an opening band and then a changeover and then the next band and a changeover and then a headliner and then everybody goes home. And that can always make for a great show, you know, depending, but for as many shows as we've played and that we do play, it does get monotonous, you know. It gets kind of, you know, it's the same kind of routine, you know. So we wanted to bring something different to the table and this kind of fun, you know, way of sharing music, you know, where there's no such thing as egos or, you know, hierarchy. Everyone involved, we're all on the same page and we're all in the same boat together and just kind of go into it as just like-minded folks. You know, I grew up in the South, and I grew up around a lot of, you know, on my mother's side of the family, they're all Cajun folks, and there's a lot of Cajun music in my household and in my family when I was young. Being in the South and coming from just kind of a somewhat conservative old Southern Baptist household, you know, there's a lot of gospel spirit driven type music, and you know, obviously in the South where I was, a lot of bluegrass, a lot of country music. So there was kind of a lot of this mix in my family, and I guess in my early roots of learning to play guitar and playing music. And then I found skateboarding and Bad Brains, and I went in a completely different direction. You know, there was a lot of different aspects of putting this tour together and pulling it together with the friends, you know, that we had on the very first one. Talking to Ben Nichols and Tim Barry and Austin Lucas and, you know, a ton of the people that were on that first run that just got it. You know, they got the idea, and the main goal was to make it an annual and an international event. But when we were putting it together, we weren't planning on exposing that idea, because we weren't sure how people were going to take it. Or, you know, I've never organized an annual international tour before,
yeah,
you know, on my own. So, you know, it was more about kind of just seeing how the people gravitated to it, seeing how all the artists liked it, how we liked it, you know. It's definitely a different way of touring than what I grew up around.
You kind of mentioned that this whole concept for the tour was a little bit risky, but one of the things that kind of reminds me of is this whole acoustic punk thing, and I don't want to really call it that, but a lot of the people involved with the tour, they came from a punk background, and I'm just curious, why do you think that not only the musicians who come from this background are attracted to this kind of Americana and folk and country, but also the audience?
There's a few answers to that question, honestly. Like, for starters, I think there's a lot of parallels between folk music and punk rock music, at least for me. I think every single songwriter, artist, whatever, anybody you ask, that same question may give you a different answer, you know, who knows. But for me, I've seen a lot of parallels. In writing music, to me, they're not that far apart, you know. A lot of the early Hot Water Music stuff was all written on acoustic guitar. Writing songs on an acoustic before I was ever writing them on an electric, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I got an electric first in my life, but my parents let me play it for about 15 minutes before they took it away from me and brought back an acoustic guitar. That's a whole nother story. But
yeah.
A lot of us out there doing it who have come from the community, you know, the punk community, have been playing acoustically and even writing or playing this kind of music a lot longer than, you know, what most people think. Not as many people paid attention to it back then, and a lot of our bands when we were younger and, you know, full of a lot more angst and piss and vinegar, you know, a lot of us just definitely were more drawn to just, you know, screaming our heads off and, you know, at the show and then going home and sitting around the fire and playing acoustic until the sun came up. You know what I mean? I don't know. It seems like, you know, with age and at certain times, sometimes those roles kind of flip-flop, you know?
Yeah.
To me, they've always been similar, and to me it's just more about just writing songs that move you and make you think, make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, and you know, to me if it's making me feel something one way or the other, you know, then it's worth exploring and it's worth taking it on. But I think that you know, to me in a lot of ways it's very similar, you know, writing, sitting down, whether I'm writing something that's later on going to be electric or, you know, something that's just going to be a old folky song, you know.
Till I'm rolling up to my door, got some good times dancing under the fire, and one at the end of the road, or chasing down a dream, running on and clean with one out of radio. I'm gonna lay my head on the chest I know.
I know that Hot Water Music has a new album coming out in May, but what else do you have planned with the band or just your acoustic stuff?
The acoustic stuff's constant. I mean, a Hot Water record coming out in May. I'm constantly writing. I just stack up songs until it feels good or feels like a right time to make another record.
Yeah, I've always actually been kind of curious about the band Hot Water Music's name, because it's an old, I mean, I know you know it's a Bukowski short story collection, but I was just curious about just kind of the decision
how
behind
it came
that.
About?
Yeah.
Well, it probably isn't nearly as dramatic as you would probably like it to be. But if I remember right, I think we were sitting around, we were all Bukowski fans, we, you know, we read all kinds of stuff, but at the time we were all kind of going through a big Bukowski phase and passing those books around and collecting those books. And at one point, I think either Wallard or George, oh, maybe Wallard was reading Hot Water Music or had a copy of it, and we needed a name. We had a show coming up, one of our first shows, and we needed a name to put on the flyer. And we had been racking our brains over and over, kind of coming up with all kinds of weird, crazy names. And it was George, our drummer, who just said, "What about Hot Water Music?" And everybody just kind of like, "I don't know if I love it or hate it." You know?
Yeah.
Like, we're like, "That sounds like a damn, like a bluegrass band or something," you know? Well, it really, you know, to us it did then.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the time, you know, where we were playing a lot in Gainesville, and it seemed like back then, or at least in the scene that we were in, you know, a lot of the local bands, you know, Crimp Shrine was one of the, you know, the most favorited band, you know, in our whole scene, or at least in our little circle or world, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we sounded nothing like them.
Yeah.
So we just had this feeling that everybody, you know, disliked what we were doing, which actually kind of fueled our fire that much more. You know, we were like, well, nobody cares, nobody likes it, but we love it. Let's just keep trucking, you know?
Yeah.
And that was our attitude. I think when we kind of settled on that name, that feeling was still there. It was like, man, people are gonna hate this name. Great. You know?
Reagan will be in Salt Lake City on Friday, April 13th in the Vertigo venue of the complex. Tickets are just $14 or $25 with the Revival Tour LP included, and those tickets are available at revivaltourtix.com. For more info on the tour, music, and Reagan himself, visit him at chuckreaganmusic.com.
I told myself I would not fail, I would not fall, I would prevail. It just takes one hit.
Baby Ghosts is a four-piece pop-punk band with members from Provo and Salt Lake City. They formed in spring of 2011, playing select shows in both cities with a changing lineup during their first year together. They released the EP Baby Tape in August of 2011 and then funded their full-length album on Kickstarter.com. In March of 2012, the band released that album, Let's Always Hang Out Together, okay? Here's Ghost Girlfriend from that release. That was Ghost Girlfriend from the band Baby Ghosts. To buy that album as well as the rest of the band's releases, visit them at babyghosts.bandcamp.com. And for more info on the band, search for Baby Ghosts on Facebook. The Scarlet Letter is the latest play from the local group Plan B Theatre Company. The production was adapted from the original American novel by Nathaniel Hawthorne. It's about adulteress Hester Prynne, who's forced to wear the Scarlet Letter A across her chest as a mark of public shaming. Pregnant with her lover's child, who remains unknown and filled with guilt, her husband vows to seek revenge. Slug writer Johnny Logan recently spoke with the director Cheryl Ann Clough and playwright Jennifer Nee.
You know, The Scarlet Letter is a story that most people are pretty familiar with, but since this is an adaptation, could you give us an overview of what your story is?
My story follows the basic structure of the novel. I had a few really interesting constraints that ended up being opportunities in that I was given a cast of four. And so a novel that involved an entire town became a very compact story of four characters. And so I had to find a way to give the sense of a community within, embodied by a very few people, and how to convey that sort of group shaming, that group judgment on a person.
It's hard without the group.
It's hard without the group. so we'll see whether it works or not. But in general, you know, I tried to stay as faithful as I could to, if not the actual text, to at least what I felt was the heart of the story.
Which I think you did really well.
Oh.
Just reading through the novel and, you know, reading through the script too, it's fun to see where you've combined, you know, scenes together, combined lines from townspeople into conversations between two characters. And I think you did a marvelous job doing that. I really do.
So after Jerry came to you with the idea, like, what were, you know, your steps going through kind of recasting this? Was there anything you absolutely wanted to keep, or, you know, things that you were like, this has to go?
Nothing did I say this has to go. Mostly because you don't say that about Nathaniel Hawthorne or American classics. But, you know, what I really wanted to preserve, I think, was the sort of dual, the ethereal kind of otherworldly aspect that Pearl brings in, which is sort of, in my mind, I saw it as Nathaniel Hawthorne saying, gosh, you know, what if? And sort of gave a voice to all of his dreams. What if we could really say this? What if we could really think this? He made that voice a little girl. And I thought, what a wonderful choice that is. And then to make solid the hardness of what he actually saw around him, I really wanted to find a way to keep that if I could. And I think that was a hard thing for me, just because, you know, it's like I said in my blog post, I am not Nathaniel Hawthorne. I'm just, you know, and so all I could do was sit down and start scribbling. Like I said, I hope it works. I don't know.
Now, Cheryl, you know, The Scarlet Letter's been adapted many times in film, literature, music, even other plays and television. What is going to set this version apart from all of that? You know, why should people come see this play?
There is a reason that The Scarlet Letter continues to be so significant even today. I think that a lot of people think that The Scarlet Letter is about adultery and sin. But my take on it is that it's about hypocrisy and how that is a much, much worse sin than adultery, and how much damage that can do and can inflict upon a person. You know, I think our production will present the story at its heart and the words at its heart, and it'll boil down all of the novel into these four basic characters instead of having, you know, casts of thousands. And I think it simplifies things a lot. You know, for people who may feel that Nathaniel Hawthorne was really wordy in his novel, and sometimes you read a paragraph and you think, what did I just read? This is very accessible. Very, very accessible. People will be able to understand, and we get to the point of the novel and the story very quickly.
Jennifer, you know, you said in your blog post that you issue you know, labels such as feminist.
Yeah, I do.
But how do you think that this play will hold up against feminist criticism?
I hope it'll hold up well. I hope that women and men will sense the love that I have for each of these characters. And that I attempted as best I could to give voice to their humanity. And I think that that is at the heart of feminism, is just to recognize that we are equally human. And that we are and can be strong and weak and kind and not. And that that is not something that one gender can claim over the other.
Absolutely. In the original book, there's lots of contrast between things like, you know, past and present, good and evil, individual and society.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the main ones is day and night, and, you know, kind of civilization versus nature sort of mm-hmm. things. Did you focus on any one of those, or maybe a few of those, in your version? And if so, what messages are you hoping the audience takes from your version of the play?
Golly, you know, I didn't. I think what I tried to do was to really envision the scene as I read it, and tried to get a sense for why that scene was in that place at that time, with those people in it. And I know that there are lots of contrast, and that Hawthorne in particular is really, really good at sort of staking posts in the sand and saying, okay, this is here to learn if you want to learn. But for me, it was really all about these characters and about this theme of judgment and hypocrisy. Jerry said, can you write for an hour? Can you write to an hour? I went, okay, I'm going to boil down the Scarlet Letter to an hour with four people. It was really, really important for me just to get as close as I could to people, place, theme, and purpose. I hope that I didn't miss too many of those, you know, those important points in the sand.
Is there anything else about the play you guys would like to add?
David Fetzer, Mark Fawson, Lauren Null, and Claire Wilson, the cast. Forget the writing, forget me, come see these folks. They're a remarkable bunch. And they're gonna knock it out of the park.
The Scarlet Letter kicks off on Thursday, April 12th, and runs until April 22nd. General admission is $20, but students can get in for just $10. For tickets, visit arttix.org or call them at 801-355-ARTS. For more information on the play and Plan B, check out planbtheater.org.
Hey, JP.
Hey, Esther.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, guys.
Here we are.
In another edition of the weekly Daily Calendar Update.
I like that. I like that intro. That's the best one we've ever done. It's really casual, not forced, right?
That's great. Let's keep it moving.
Okay. Thank you, Josh. Stay on task. Every week, we like to sit down with different Slug staffers and talk about upcoming events. This week, we'll be previewing April 10th through the 16th. Let's start off with Tuesday, April 10th. This is a show that's taking place at Urban Lounge. Esther, do you want to fill us in?
Yeah, Neon Indian is playing and Friends are opening. It should be a really big show, actually. It's kind of indie pop stuff, just really popular.
Which Friends are opening up there?
Just Friends.
Just their
Friends. The band Friends.
Oh. Oh, that's the band name.
Yes. Friends. Friends are opening for Neon Indian.
It sounds different when you present it differently, right? And then that same day at Burt's, some folk punk, which is a real thing, Bobby Joe Ebola and the Children McNuggets.
Yeah, this should actually be a really fun show. Gavin Hoffman, Slug Writer, wrote a feature on them last year, so you can check that out.
Are you gonna
Slug Archives?
Yeah. Hoffman's the best.
Are you gonna go see Chicken McNuggets?
I'm gonna go eat some Children McNuggets.
You don't do that. You're a vegan, Esther. I don't think that's gonna happen.
Yeah, children nice are try. Vegan.
Are they? They're GMO free, I think. At least. And Wednesday, April 11th, Cults, Spectrals, and Mrs. Magician will be at Urban Indie Rock.
Yeah, I'm actually excited for Cults because I really wanted to catch them at South by Southwest and didn't get the time. So I'm going to definitely be there. They're supposed to put on a pretty good show.
Don't you like the Spectrals, Josh? Or am I mistaken on that?
Actually, I've never heard of the Spectrals.
Is there even a the in there? I will just throw that in there.
I always put a the.
Have you heard of Beatles?
No.
It's a band.
I've heard of the Zombies.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. You get confused, right? One thing that we're not confused about, we've got all the information necessary on this, especially at our website. Thursday, April 12th, it's another edition of the Wasatch Roller Derby at the Derby Depot.
Mm-hmm. It's the Black Diamond Divas versus the Red Rockettes, and Wasatch Roller Derby has been going strong. Their season's had already a few bouts, and you can actually check out our coverage on those bouts online, slugmag.com.
I'm glad that we're joined by one of the biggest derby fans in the office right now, Josh Joy.
You mean demolition derbies.
I misspoke.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is actually not that.
No, it's not.
I'll explain what it
they're
is.
They're both on wheels.
Yeah, you know about the derby then, the Wasatch Roller Derby?
Yeah, I do actually. I have a few friends that are in it.
It's on skates.
Yeah.
Fishnet tights and hot girls.
I love that Josh Joy is here. Have I said that yet? I think I did earlier, but I'll say it again.
I take credit for inviting him.
Do you want to tell us about this upcoming play that you're really excited about, Josh?
Yeah. It's Plan B Theaters, The Scarlet Letter, and begins on Thursday, April 12th.
If you use the promo code MEMBER, you can get promo tickets 2-for-1 on their April 21st performance at 4 p.m.
That's what that is. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness you're here. It's like you wrote that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm actually kind of stoked about this because I feel like it's really relevant for all the stuff that's been going on lately, the Republican war against women. The Scarlet Letter is a good play for this time.
We've actually just previewed it here on the show, so people are already excited, and they're doubly excited now that they've got that code.
Yeah.
And happy birthday to a writer of that day. Do you want to just do the birthday right now, because you're so good at it to say?
Happy birthday, Joy Carroll.
He's so great.
One of our music writers.
And Friday, April 13th, I like anything with the word cabaret in it. It's going to be another edition of the Underground Gypsy Cabaret at Bar Deluxe. I've never been to one. Have you guys been at all?
I've never. I don't really know what that entails. So.
It's pretty much underground gypsies.
Okay.
In a cabaret.
All right.
I heard it's pretty awesome, though, like snake charmers and stuff like that. Crazy stuff. I like anything with the word underground in it.
And Bar Deluxe, of course, at the best address in Salt Lake City, 666 South State Street. Mm-hmm. And Saturday, April 14th, happy birthday to Kelly Tompkins. She's the designer here. Actually, do you want to do that birthday, Sarah?
Happy birthday, Kelly!
So good at that. Just really fast. And Localized is that day as well, featuring Handy Capitalist, Stark Raving Mad, and Chain Whip at our usual location of Urban Lounge.
Yeah, this should be a fun show. It's our punk rock showcase, so it should be lots of high energy, lots of PBR drinking. Lots of punk rock.
And lots of JP will be there.
Lots of me.
Yeah.
I'll be there. I'll have gained a lot of weight. My extra excess will be there.
What?
I'm going to go on a Big Mac diet this month. That's neither here nor there. Josh, you're going to be at that Localized. I know how much you like punk rock showcases.
Josh, yeah, I like any Localized, really.
Yeah, Josh and I go to every Localized, pretty much.
I'm really glad about that.
You can catch us at the photo booth.
Yes.
Do you guys charge to be in photos with people? You should.
Well, we make them pay for the photos.
At least, at the very least. Those ungrateful assholes. $5 per picture, I say. You guys could do it. You guys will wear sombreros or other sort of props. Are you bringing props again this time?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, always props.
I will be wearing t-shirts.
Yes, I will be wearing jeans, most likely.
Are you going to wear that I'm with stupid t-shirt you always wear, Josh?
Yes.
Great. It's going to point at a stare. It's real funny. It's a real funny sight gag.
Yeah, real funny, guys.
We also have an app. Did you guys hear about this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know about the app quite well.
Well, you designed some of it, Josh.
I did, yes, that's true.
Now you know all about it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we keep bringing it up every show, like none of us know about it, but we all know about it.
I find that most people don't.
But a lot of people besides us, they don't know about it, and they would be really excited if they knew that they could read old issues on there. They can listen to the podcast. You can also communicate with us, and it's got the weekly, daily calendar right on it.
And it also has our Sound Waves from the Underground voicemail that you can just click call, and you should totally call us.
Well, anything else about this week you guys would like to talk about, or any other slug tidbits about events? Anything real quick? No?
I don't really know of anything coming up.
Yeah, just make sure that you pick up the magazine, and you can actually get the daily calendar in the back of the mag, or you can go to slugmag.com, and we do have it on our front page right there. So, here you go.
Thank you, Esther, and thank you, Josh.
Yeah.
Thank you, JP.
Thanks.
Did you say whatnot or toodles?
Toodles.
Thanks.
Slug Seagrass.
SLFM is the solo project of ukulele songstress Jessica Davis. She started playing Salt Lake City venues in 2008, releasing both her debut self-titled album and follow-up release, Sailors Lie for Me, in 2009. SLFM was invited to open for Sonic Youth when they came to town in October of 2010, and she recently released her latest full-length album, Sweet Treats, on January 1st of this year. She then embarked on a three-month U.S. tour and promotion of that album, covering the Western U.S. during the month of February. And thanks for joining me today, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
You recently got back from a West Coast tour. What was one of your favorite venues that you played and why?
I really enjoyed the Tin Can Ale House in San Diego. It's run by musicians, and everyone was super friendly and really fun.
When I think of a Tin Can Ale House, I think of kind of like a saloon. What did it look like inside?
Just like a hip bar.
Just a hip bar.
Yeah. Well, it was a cool place. There were lights everywhere, and I mean, yeah. Very friendly for musicians.
I should mention that you've got an Eastern leg of the tour coming up still to go. You're just kind of back in town for a few days.
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks total, a little break, but yeah.
And what's the rest of the tour looking like?
The Midwest, so Colorado again, and then Nebraska, Iowa, Ohio, Illinois, like all over the place, Michigan, then New England.
Have you ever been through the Midwest touring at all with
the
music?
Yeah, I did 3 months of the whole U.S. last spring, so I've been to almost all 50 states now.
So this is your third tour then, if I'm not mistaken?
This is my fourth tour.
Fourth tour.
Yeah.
How do people in places outside of Salt Lake City take the ukulele?
They like it. I mean... I think everyone tells me the same thing, that they've never seen anyone play the ukulele like I do, which hopefully is a good thing, so.
No, that's a compliment, I'd say. And how did you originally stumble on that idea of distorting a ukulele and then playing songs the length of, like, a punk rock ballad?
Well, I saw Tune Yards play, she plays the ukulele, and so I decided to get a ukulele, since I had a hard time learning the guitar, and I had just an old distortion pedal that I ran it through to make it sound cooler, and I saw No Bunny play, and he plays, like, fast garage rock stuff, and so I just started doing my thing, experimenting, and that's how it worked out.
Now, I can't remember the last time I saw you play. I believe you were playing a slug event, and you had an electrified, of course you play an electric ukulele.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Is there a company that manufactures these things, or do you put in your own pickup?
With my first ukulele, it was a soprano ukulele, and I had just a acoustic guitar pickup that I mounted on the front of it, and I got a new one just before my last tour in September. They put an underbridge pickup in it, so it's like all fancy, and I got it acoustic music because those guys are super cool, so...
Local shop out on 33rd, is that correct?
No,
where is that?
It's on 4th South and like 8th.
Oh, yeah, I know where that is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. A little propers to those guys out there. How did you book your tour? How'd you book this tour?
I just book it all myself. Looking up DIY venues and talking to bands and just lots of searching.
And social networking at all?
Yeah, definitely. Lots of that. Once you start meeting the people that put on shows, all of a sudden you know tons of people all over the place. It's completely random. Like, I play in Olympia, and then they're like, oh, hey, I know people in Buffalo, New York. And I'm like, okay, cool. We'll be friends.
So there's definitely a crowd out there for people that like this kind of music. Some people maybe call it twee. I don't know how you feel about that. How would you describe it?
I don't know. It's just fast punk. People said thrash or ukuleling or... Whatever.
Ukuleling?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, whatever. Puke. That was another one. Punk ukulele says puke.
Oh, I was going to say, don't use that one, but that makes sense.
Like it.
That
funny.
Makes sense. And who have been, or what audiences out there have really enjoyed the music and have really connected? What cities, what places seem to really enjoy?
One of my favorite shows this last tour, it's always like the small towns, but Phoenix and Flagstaff, Arizona were fantastic, you know, just after touring for like a week or so and they play a show and they're like the first people to mosh at a show, and then, I mean, whether they're drunk or not, they're like yelling and, you know, super excited, and you just, you know, you feel like you're doing what you're supposed to do, I guess.
I've never seen anybody mosh the ukulele music, but...
No, I've never seen it either, but...
It's gotta be a first time. I hope you got that on tape or something, so you can say...
it's all visual memory thing.
Well, now we have it on record.
Yeah.
There has been moshing to ukulele music, and you made that happen. Going back to the ukulele a little bit in terms of how you play it, is it standard tuning? Do you do a drop D on it, or how do you get the sound?
I have, it's a concert ukulele. I don't know if it's supposed to be tuned differently, but it's Ituna is a soprano ukulele, which is G-C-E-A, and the G is like an octave higher, so it's like the fifth fret. If you capo the fifth fret on a guitar in the bottom four strings, just the G's an octave higher. Yeah.
So we could play the ukulele at home if we have a capo and a guitar.
Yeah, it's like one of the easiest instruments to play. I get people say, oh, I learned that in kindergarten. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah, but have you distorted it and had people mosh to it?
Yeah.
Exactly, no, they haven't. Now, you've recorded a lot starting in, it seems like, 2009, right?
Yeah.
Mainly when you started up?
Yeah.
And you recently recorded your latest full-length album. Do you want to talk a little bit about the recording process for the songs Nightmare, Nude, and Backbird?
It's all the same. I mean, I used to just record with a little digital recorder that once I was done, I just undid it and it's a USB cord, or USB, so it goes into the computer. But this time I have some sound software that's like super outdated and I just like use my computer and hooked it up that way. But I just like placed my amp right next to the computer and then like worked with the knobs and stuff and did it that way. There's nothing, I think, professional about it at all.
I love that.
That's why I think like a lot of songs it, like peaks a bit and whatever.
But well, people obviously like it, right?
Yeah, actually people seem to like this one a lot more than some of the other ones. Like my last one, it was, I had a friend help me record it in their basement and then someone that he was going to school with mastered it and I think it was like too clean cut for what I do. So I think the dirtier and grungier, the better.
I've enjoyed your performances before, and they all seem to be pretty high on the, I don't know, the distorted, like, punk scale, I guess you could say. And you're not used to that. You see a nice young lady like yourself approaching the stage with a ukulele, and you think of something maybe completely different, and then you get up there, and this interesting sound comes out.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that when, before a concert or something, people just meet you, and then afterwards they're like, wow.
Yeah, especially with songs that I yell or get a little scary, I guess, and people are like, oh, like they first meet, they're like, oh, you're just some weird girl that's a little too friendly, and I'm like, oh, hey guys, I'll be a friend, and then after I play, and they're like, oh, can we still talk to her? Like, she's so intimidating is a word that I've gotten, but
after the show,
so weird. Yeah,
wow. Yeah, because you are that friendly girl, as you said. I remember when I first met you. What a nice young lady, I thought. Obviously, I keep using the term young lady. It's just, you know, distorted ukulele. You're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's a cool idea. Do you know of anybody else that's doing anything like that? You mentioned a few bands earlier, but any new artists picking up the ukulele?
I've played with a few. There's one guy, I can't remember his name, which I feel terrible, but he actually was in Buffalo, New York, and he did something that was kind of similar. He just ran it through a guitar amp that kind of made it distorted and stuff, but it's not quite on the same scale, I guess.
No, you full-on distort that thing.
Yeah, I got an overdrive pedal, so it's like, now it's really legit.
You're serious.
Yeah.
It says it right in the name of the pedal.
Yeah, and it makes it louder, too, so it's like loud and distorted and angry.
I can't wait to hear it. Speaking of, we're going to listen to Nightmare, Nude, and Backbird right now off your second full-length album, Sweet Treats. And thanks for joining me, Jessica.
Well, thanks for having me.
Gonna catch a man of ghosts. Gonna show about the damn the awakening. Gonna shove it in her eyes. Gonna shake that body down side. Gonna show the spooky emotions. Gonna wait to cut her off. Gonna take that body outside. Where are you gonna run? Gonna go to the mystery of Macho Man. Aren't you ever gonna run? Gonna take that body outside. Go down.
That was Nightmare Nude and Backbird from SLFM's full-length album Sweet Treats. SLFM has set out on the second half of her tour covering the rest of the U.S. As of the date of this episode, she is currently in the Northeast playing several dates in New York. To get a full set of dates, watch live performances, and download all her albums, visit her online at ispyslfm.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit us at slugmag.com. I've just got a quick question for you. What was the first comic book that you ever read? What memorable titles got you interested in comic books or characters that you still love to this day? Feel free to send us an email with your answers to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. We've got an upcoming segment that we're planning about comic books, and we really want to know what you have to say about this more and increasingly popular medium. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T-Done, and technical design by Kate O'Connor. On next week's show, we're going to be learning about the Sugar House Literary Review. We'll be talking to Jeffrey Stedman of Yelp about sushi, and we'll be doing a summer movie preview with Jimmy Martin.